Senator Laxalt, in presenting you to the Republican National Committee, Secretary Drew Lewis said your first job as the newly invented post of General Sherman should be to convince President Reagan to announce his candidacy right away. Have you started convincing him?
Well, not since Drew made his pronouncement, but I must say that I wouldn't have undertaken this position as General Chairman of the Republican Party, whatever that means, unless I was satisfied, as a matter of political instinct, that Ronald Reagan was going to be a candidate for re-election. I rather think he will be, and I rather think, considering the political economic circumstances in which we now find ourselves, that he really has a responsibility to run again.
From CBS News Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Senator Paul Laxalt of Nevada, General Chairman of the Republican Party. Senator Laxalt will be questioned by CBS News Congressional Correspondent Phil Jones, by David Broder, National Political Reporter for the Washington Post, and by the moderator, CBS News Correspondent George Herman. We shall resume the interview in a moment, but first, here is George Herman.
Paul Laxalt was born in Reno, Nevada on the 2nd of August, 1922, and therefore he turned 60 years of age last summer. His father was an immigrant sheep herder who insisted that the family speak French at home. His mother ran a small hotel in Carson City, the state capital, and young Laxalt heard a lot of political talk around the table every day. Laxalt went on to law school after service during World War II, and he was made district attorney of Ormsby County. Then came years of private practice and running for public office. Laxalt was elected lieutenant governor of Nevada in 1963 and governor in 1966. He retired from the state house to found his own law firm and to become active in building and operating a hotel casino. But private life didn't last long, and 4 years after his term as governor expired, Laxalt was elected to the United States Senate. That was in 1974. Throughout all these campaigns, Laxalt campaigned as a thorough conservative, although at the same time he maintained a strong defense of Nevada's gambling industry. As governor, he worked hard to get Nevada gambling cleaned up, removed insofar as possible from criminal elements, and taken over by major national corporations. Laxalt has kept the same conservative stance in the Senate, but unlike some of his conservative colleagues, he remains on extremely good terms with moderates and even liberals. He is widely liked and respected as a result. The fact that he's President Reagan's best friend in the Senate doesn't hurt either. The two men became friends when they were governors of adjoining states, and they remain friends even though they don't always see eye to eye. Laxalt, for example, considers corporate business to be selfish and willing to accept federal bailouts. The senator married the former Carol Wilson, and they have 7 children, 5 daughters and 2 sons. But he may not have much family time now that he serves as general chairman of the Republican National Committee, as well as senator from Nevada.
And now we continue with Face the Nation.
Senator Laxalt, you said President Reagan has a responsibility to run again. I presume he has a responsibility to his party to announce in good time. What time would you expect would be good time for the president to announce?
Well, he's indicated a response recently at his press conference sometime during the year. I don't think that he can wait around until December of this year to make the announcement. I think it actually has to work out in 2 phases. If he chooses not to run, I would think that that determination and announcement should be made earlier than otherwise, in fairness to the other potential candidates, and we have a few.
In springtime?
Oh, I wouldn't fix an exact time, but I would think if he comes down with a decision he's going to take a political walk, that he should notify those who would run in fairness to their candidacies, because the fact is that most of the leading Democrats have been out on the trail for weeks, been raising money, and under the present laws, you just simply need the lead time. Now, if he chooses to run, and I think he will, then that announcement can come sometime later.
Senator, you're his friend as well as being his political manager now. Do you have any qualms about asking Ronald Reagan to stay in this job until within a few weeks of his 78th birthday?
Well, I really don't, David, and of course that's a problem. You know, I had qualms to some extent on a personal basis in influencing him somewhat in 1976 and again in 80 for the same reasons. The presidency is a difficult job. And as Howard Baker said the other day, announcing his retirement, there is other life out there. And there certainly is for Ronald Reagan. But I'm convinced, looking at him, that Ronald Reagan today, in terms of his physical and emotional health, David, is in remarkably good shape. So that leaves us essentially to divorce the personal considerations with the very important consideration as to whether the job's been done. I don't think it has been, nor do I think it can be in another 2 years, because the more that I live with this, I'm convinced now that what appears to be a four-year presidency is really two.
Senator,
let me, can I pursue this one moment, Phil, if I may? The first year really is a matter of settling in place, getting your ball club in order, finding out what this game's about. The fourth year, for all intents and purposes, running for office. So we've been in a period here since Eisenhower, one-term presidencies, and I don't think that it's all that healthy in terms of his situation. I really think that he has quite a responsibility to go for another four. Yes, Phil.
Senator Laxalt, you have indicated that you took the job as general chairman of the National Republican Party because you thought Ronald Reagan was going to seek re-election. Can we then assume that if Mr. Reagan decides not to run, that you will step down and resign from that position?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't even want to think about the prospect, because if he doesn't run, that's going to leave Paul Laxalt in a very unenviable position of attempting to broker a nomination among several of his friends and colleagues.
Wouldn't Vice President Bush be the leading contender if that happened?
Well, I can't speculate about that. Of course, George Bush would be a strong contender. Whether he'd be the leading contender is another matter. I just frankly don't know. When you have a primary structure of the kind that you have now, I think it'll be up totally for grabs.
Why shouldn't he be the leading contender?
Well, who's to say at this point? You've got a brand new ball game, and essentially what you have involved in putting a presidential campaign together is that person who get the political horses around him, get the organization put together, and get the money put together. If this contingency occurs, and I don't think it will, George obviously would be a strong contender. Whether he'd be the leading one, I don't know.
Way back at the beginning of this program, you said general chairman of the committee, whatever that is, the job of general chairman, newly invented just for you, I understood it was to formulate and articulate goals and policies, which really sort of sounds like a job for the president rather than like the for the general chairman.
No, I would presume to do that at all. But in conjunction with the president, conjunction with the Republican leader, from time to time, that would be part of my responsibility. Most of my responsibility, as I see it in this position, will be pretty much to be an overlay on top of the existing Republican structure, consisting of the Congressional Committee, which Guy Vanderjack handles, the senatorial handled by Dick Lugar.
Would you then go on if the president...
Let me proceed. Well, we have the RNC, of course, and Frank Perrenkoff will be handling that. I'll be in an overlay function there, and as I view my principal responsibility, will be to formulate Republican goals and policies, articulate them consistently with the president, and more importantly than all that, just keep the lines of communication open.
Would you, if the president decided to run, go on to be chairman of the committee to reelect the president, whatever it calls itself?
That's wholly undecided yet. We don't even know at this point.
Would you want to?
Well, I don't know. You see, I have a problem, George, because I've got other senatorial responsibilities. And also, when we come to the point, and I hope that we will, have a re-elect committee. We don't know at this point whether it should be within the framework of RNC or be a separate committee. That has to be decided later.
Senator, you know at least in broad outline what the president's going to recommend tomorrow in this budget proposal. Looking at it just for a moment in purely political terms, is a budget that talks about deficits of over $100 billion till the end of a second Reagan term that calls for a lot of tax increases, calls for $50 billion in reductions in federal health and medical support programs. Is that going to be a political asset to you in your job?
Well, I think so. You know, I've had doubts, as most other leaders have had the last couple of years, about where the program's going. I'm convinced now from the signals that we've received these last several weeks from the business community, the economic community, and I must say from the political community, that the program is going to work. And if this program works, as I hope that it will, and this economy grows, I think a lot of the budgetary problems will be out of the way. The cuts, the social cuts that are contemplated in this new budget, as I understand it, won't cut as far as the very needy are concerned. You're working toward the middle. And we've made budgetary, or the president has made budgetary decisions here. They're absolutely vital, in my estimation, rather courageous, because we finally moved in the areas that we've known for a long while we had to move in, and those are the so-called sacred entitlement areas, the transfer programs, which have been eating us up. Politically, I can't help but feel that the best result is to call them as you see them, David, in the interest of all the American people. And if this economic recovery program goes as we hope that it will, I think it'll be politically advantageous.
Just one follow-up. You say if it goes as you hope, then the budget problem will be out of the way. As I understand it, the budget will say that even if the president gets everything he asked for, the deficit in fiscal 88 at the end of a second Reagan term would be over $100 billion, higher than it was when he took it over from Jimmy Carter.
Yes, and unfortunately, well, I don't like that result, and hardly anybody else does. But in relation to percentage of GNP, it's far better than it's been. And I must say also, David, and keep this in mind, one of the reasons why this budget's going to be far more acceptable to the Congress is because it's realistic, and if anything, it's conservative. You have growth estimates in this budget upon which that 88 deficit is estimated of around 4%. Now, we have a lot of people in this town and elsewhere who aren't right-wing economists who will tell you that the 4% estimate coming out of Dave Stockman's shop is far too conservative. It could easily be 6 or 7%.
You have Mr. Feldstein in the president's own office saying that no matter what the growth rate is, it will not eat into the deficit.
Well, I don't accept that, respectfully. I just don't. I just can't help but feel the biggest challenge we've had here for 2 years now is to get a handle on the inflation rate. We have. We pulled it down effectively from 13 to 3%, or a bit more, I guess. And beyond that, the other thing, as I see, that we had to do, George, is to exercise, finally, some fiscal restraint. Now, admittedly, we haven't done as well as we wanted, a lot of us, but within the political restraints that are built into this situation, we've done a reasonably good job. We finally have a sense of fiscal responsibility on that hill, far more than any time I've ever seen it. That, to me, represents the key, because once we exercise some fiscal restraint, create a climate out there in the country of confidence among the business people and the investors, the economy will take off.
But, Senator, the problem of your party has been, has it not, that it is so narrow-based. You have not won over the poor. You have not won over blacks. You have not won over women voters. Now you have a whole new class of small businessmen who are the new poor, and you don't seem to have won them over. How does the Republican Party broaden its base and win these people over?
George, we have to continue working with them, and I don't really accept the premise that we're in all that kind of difficulty with the women or with a lot of the other groups. Most of the reasons why that's the case is historical. We have to continue working on them. I think that when you consider the difficult political decisions that this president's made, and they've been difficult, let's face it, for him to maintain a level of support as he is in most all the polls now, to 40 to 45% in that range, is miraculous. It's a wonder that he isn't in the 20s. And for the people who, you know, run around this country and say that Ron Reagan is vulnerable politically, are kidding themselves. Because I think right now he's very near the low point in terms of public esteem in these polls, and he's going to go up from there.
You keep talking about if the program works, and you say you think it will, but if it doesn't, do you think that Ronald Reagan should hold off on announcing his future plans until he sees whether or not this is indeed starting to turn around?
Well, who's to say at what point that we know whether it's actually going to work or not? All we're thinking really is in terms of trend lines, and we've seen within the last several days that we have some positive trend lines.
Well, let me
just refine this. Just, you know, I think I know what you're getting at, an extreme result situation. I'm not inclined to indulge in that kind of scenario. But let's suppose that within the next several weeks, for whatever reason, Phil, that the interest rate starts to move away on us. Let's suppose that we're moving up to 15, 16 in that range. This thing gets out of control. Surely that's something he has to consider. But it's not going to happen, because I'm convinced the last few weeks, with the prospects of the deficits that David was talking about, if that didn't stampede the financial community in terms of accelerating the business, the interest rate, I don't think anything will. I think they finally realized that we're trying to do a job here, that we're going to be able to finance these deficits, and that economic recovery is on its way. As long as they do that, they're not going to move away from us on interest rates.
But I do understand you correctly. You are now saying that if interest rates were to go up, if unemployment were to go higher, that this should be a factor in Ronald Reagan's decision on whether or not to seek re-election.
Oh, I think it's a factor, of course. We've got to determine here sometime during the year as to whether this presidency is viable. Ronald Reagan, myself, nobody else is going to take the Republican Party or the country over the cliff. Just not going to do that.
You have doubts about the viability right now?
I don't. I feel better, Phil, at this point concerning the viability of the Reagan program than any time since he's been in office. Within the last few weeks, and particularly since lame duck, I'm convinced that we finally have the blocks in place and we're going to move forward. And I think we're going to have a very, very good year, perhaps even more optimistic than some of us optimists feel.
Senator, it's striking that so much of the criticism of the president recently has come from your fellow conservatives, people who've been long in his corner, from senators, from columnists, from political organizers who were part of the movement that brought Ronald Reagan to office. They're complaining about him raising taxes, giving back some of the defense program. Do you think they're all wrong in their criticisms of him?
Well, I'm going to judge whether they're right or wrong. They'd be somewhat presumptuous. But I will say that some of the people that we have who are more conservative than ever choose, and I don't question their right to do so, to be the conscience of the Republican Party, be Ronald Reagan's conscience. As a result, they take absolute positions, which is fine to talk about, I guess, rhetorically or in a vacuum. But when you're dealing with the exact situation, you've got to take a second look. I remember last fall when we were faced with horrendous deficits. I mean, horrendous. And we were beginning to get feedback from the street that unless we started to pump some new revenues in there, that we were going to have the interest rates back up on us. Then you sit down and you just become a little bit realistic. And that's essentially what we had to do. We had to pump into the mainstream of this deficit situation some revenue, and we did that. And it hurt. It hurt Ronald Reagan. It hurt us. So I think some of our conservative columnists tend to be absolute. They tend to be pure. Let them be
how
so.
Much,
but
you
can't run a government based upon absolute.
How much damage are they doing to the Republicans?
I don't think they're doing much damage. I really don't. I don't sense they do. I think that most of them who are riding around the country have credibility within their own constituency. I don't think they're damaging the Republican Party. I don't, Phil.
Senator Laxalt, when you say they are the conscience of the Republican Party and they tend to be pure, it gives it a sort of cachet, as though you're saying that they are basically morally correct and that it's only expediency which takes you away from them.
I don't think so, George. I'm not going to pass on their political morality. But the fact is, ever since I've been in this business, we find that within the Republican context, just as there is within the Democrat context, you have extremes. And Ronald Reagan, as far back as I can remember, even when we were neighboring governors out there in the West, caught a lot of hell, literally, from conservatives in the state of California. He couldn't satisfy them. Couldn't satisfy them fiscally because he went for taxes early. Had to. Couldn't satisfy them as social areas. You're going to continue to have that kind of criticism, whoever you are in this business, from either the left or the right.
Senator, the president said Friday that there is, and I quote, no way, unquote, to balance the budget at the level of taxation that was left after the 1981 tax bill. Do you agree that that cut was excessive?
You mean the personal tax bill?
Yes.
I have no problems with the business side. I think we needed those incentives. I'm disappointed that the business community hasn't taken greater advantage of it. As far as the personal tax cuts were concerned, sure, a lot of us had problems as to whether you declare a dividend when you're running Red Ink. But the fact is that supply side, as originally contemplated by this president, hasn't had a chance. The first 10% really amounted, by the time it was enacted and put into effect, at far less, probably about 2.5. Last year, the 10% tax was literally consumed by an increase in Social Security and other taxes. This year will be the first real time that supply side, in terms of a pure full 10% cut as to why that's going to stimulate the economy. I hope that it does, and at this point I don't think anybody really knows.
The Democrats are going to confront you, as you know, with a choice between canceling that third phase of the tax cut, at least for those over $40,000 a year in income, rather than cutting the Medicare payments for those who have to go into the hospital. Why would you prefer to keep the tax cut and cut Medicare?
Well, because, first of all, this president made a commitment to the American people that that would be his program. I see no compelling reason to do otherwise. To do that really would be to effect a political compromise that I think is undesirable. We have a total package here, which, if we can get some cooperation from our Democrat colleagues, I think we can pass, and which will serve the country well. You're going to have negotiation. I know you are. I hear it from the House side. I said, listen, we'll deal with you on the social side if you'll deal on military and if you'll deal on the third-year tax cut. That's an academic exercise because Ronald Reagan's indicated in no uncertain terms that if they fool with the third-year tax cut, that's veto-grabbed. As far as the defense situation is concerned, again, they're going to stand firm on the defense. So I just think you're dealing in academic exercise if you're talking about these kind of trade-offs.
Well, since you mentioned veto, is a jobs bill a veto item for the president if the Democrats should, or even the Republicans? There's a Republican jobs bill of $2.5 billion.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a question how it's crafted.
You don't think
if you're talking about the old CETA type program, George, the make work
so-called
leak breaking.
Well, I'm talking first about the Quail Hatch bill.
Well, I'm not familiar with the current form of that. Let me say this. There is a jobs bill presently being formulated, which will be sent up on the Hill. And these consist of incentives of various kinds. And I think that they'll do part of the job. Where we're going to come apart, and I don't think that even the Democrats consider we can go back to the old days with make-work government-type jobs. Where we're going to probably end up compromising is taking existing public works-type jobs within the existing federal framework, which are on the drafting boards, which are substantially funded, and accelerate that work.
That is the Quail Hatch proposal.
Essentially, that kind of thing, Phil, will come forward. And that isn't really dissimilar from what Tip advocated in December. Tip really went, as he advised me, and when I look at his numbers, I think it's the case, Tip told me that they're going to existing programs and all they want to do is accelerate the construction dates.
And will the president accept that?
I don't know. I can't speak for him. I think I think we're going to have to come with some form of jobs bill, so long as it's reliable and so long as it's fairly consistent with our basic philosophy. When you see, as we did the other day, 12,000 people up all night in the freezing cold applying for 200 jobs. These aren't urban youngsters. This is middle class America out there. That tells you in very poignant terms that we've got a serious unemployment problem out there. We have a part of that responsibility and we should come with something.
Would you change hats for a minute from general chairman to senator and tell me, is it your opinion as a longtime observer of Congress that the MX program is dead?
No, but I think it's in trouble, serious trouble, because you've got various component elements coming into this. You have people who never wanted the missile. You have people who want other missiles, the smaller ones, more mobile. You've got budgetary considerations, and you've got the nuclear freeze. That represents, I think, an awful lot of trouble for MX.
How about the military, the defense budget in itself? What would you estimate the final compromise cut?
I don't know. I've met with the president, as you all know, several days ago, and in company with all of my colleagues, we indicated as a matter of political reality, if nothing else, there had to be some compromises made. Those compromises were made by Mr. Weinberger over a five-year period. We met the other day, and they indicate that if they go further, they're cutting to the point that we're interfering with force structures.
Senator.
So it's my view that they're going to hold firm. What the Congress will do is another matter. Yes, Phil.
Senator, you are described over and over as the president's best friend on Capitol Hill. You see the Reagans frequently. We also hear reports that the president and his wife really don't care for the lifestyle and would like to go back to California and have it a little calmer. Do you detect in your private moments with them that they really don't like the lifestyle, the presidential lifestyle?
No, to the contrary. I learn as much, Phil, from what people don't say as what they do say. And during these last couple of years, surely there were times of stress. The shooting and the adverse press that Mrs. Reagan received and all that made it for a very difficult first year. But in this second year, I see them comfortably into the job. I think they rather like the work, and I think that they're comfortable with the lifestyle. from a personal standpoint, I think the Reagans are very comfortable with this presidency.
Senator Jim Baker, the chief of staff, said something about Secretary of Labor Donovan being a political liability. What's your judgment?
I respectfully disagree with Jim. I think Ray Donovan has done a good job under the worst possible circumstances. When you take a man who's been pilloried as much as he was and has been found innocent, I think it would be a travesty to push Ray Donovan over the side of the Reagan ship for purely political considerations. I think Ray Donovan's doing a good job and should be kept.
An easy question. What Democrat would you like to run against today?
Phil, I wouldn't dare get into that game with Phil Jones or anybody else.
Let me rescue you right there, Senator.
Thank you.
Say thank you for being our guest today on Face the Nation.